Welcome to My Guys in the Desert on a Thursday from the South Point Sportsbook. Matt Humans and Wes Reynolds. And Wes, we have a loaded show today. Kenny White, college football handicapper. Ken Korak, voice of the Oakland A's, a great radio broadcaster in baseball, and a longtime friend from Las Vegas. Ken Korak joins us at 2:45. And in the second hour today, Derek Stevens and Mike Palm from the Circa. Wes, you and I have been busy working on the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. It's going to be out in about a week. And the Big Ten's been a big focus for you. The Big Ten, the Pac-12, the American Conference, the ACC. We've got a lot to work on to get this thing out, but it's going to be a great publication when it comes out, as usual. What's jumped out to you in your research of all these teams here in the past week?
Well, when you look at from the Big Ten standpoint, and we'll cover that more with Kenny White here in a few minutes, is the fact that most of the games are conference games right away. It's the weekend of September 3rd. So you've got a lot of big matchups right away. And I think a lot of teams that have to answer some questions. A couple that stood out to me, Penn State against Wisconsin. Is that an aberration in State College, or is there some kind of downward trend happening with James Franklin's program? They return a lot of personnel on offense. Sean Clifford is back at quarterback. They're loaded at running back, and they have a really good group of receivers. So you'd expect offensively they're going to be better. They also did make a change at offensive coordinator. Mike Yurcich, who was the Texas offensive coordinator with Tom Herman last year, comes into Penn State. Kirk Sciarocca got 1 year, and James Franklin showed him the door. So they're going to run a lot more tempo in that offense at Penn State. So I think offensively they're going to be fine, but maybe this is their redemption year. I'll be interested to get Kenny's thoughts, but they certainly get thrown into the fire right away, having Wisconsin, who also had a disappointing year in their own right, went 4-3. Graham Mertz is back, but they didn't run the ball well at all last year. This did not look like Wisconsin with last year's team. So you got to think, can the running game rebound? So a lot of unanswered questions. And then Indiana and Iowa. Was Indiana's season last year kind of one of those COVID-19 season flukes? Or is there real momentum with the program? I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. There is momentum in that program. But look, Iowa is kind of like the measuring stick for Indiana to get to that next level in the Big Ten. They won't get to Ohio State or the elite level, but if you can get to that Iowa level, then all of a sudden you got a really consistent program. So some really good conference games in week one for the Big Ten.
You know, some non-conference games jumped out at me as well, working on the Pac-12. How about Washington and Michigan? Mm-hmm. How about Oregon at Ohio State? And I think a kind of an under-the-radar non-conference game that's going to be really good is Cincinnati at Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Cincinnati gets a couple tests because they're beefing up that schedule because they're a group of five team. They're the best in terms of the group of five, I think the highest power rated team. But they got left out last year for the college football playoff when people were advocating for them because they really didn't have a tough schedule. And now you get not only Indiana, you also go play Notre Dame. So that's going to be interesting to see how Cincinnati and Luke Fickell, they got a lot of personnel back, including Desmond Ridder at quarterback. So we shall see if they can maintain that top 10 ranking. But you mentioned that non-conference matchup too, Washington and Michigan. Who's going to be the quarterback at Michigan? Is it going to be McNamara? Is it going to be Alan Bowman? They've also got a five-star freshman coming in. So we know that Joe Milton is out. He's down at Tennessee with Josh Heupel now. So this is a big season for Harbaugh. He renegotiated his deal, and the buyout for like a high major program like Michigan, that's like a $4 million buyout, which you don't see that low of a buyout for a Michigan football coach. So they restructured that deal, and it's Jim Harbaugh's got to win, and he's got to win now. A lot of turnover over also on that coaching staff.
I don't think Michigan's going to miss quarterback Joe Milton.
No. No, I think McNamara, the kid from Reno that came in, I thought gave him at least a little bit of a spark, but you got Alan Bowman, who put up big numbers at Texas Tech, and he's kind of a pure passer. Michigan just has not been able to develop that recruited quarterback, but the five-star kid that comes in this year, I think is the highest-rated quarterback they've recruited since Ryan Mallett all the way back in 2007, so that tells you the root of Michigan's problems.
Well,
right
actually,
there.
Shea Patterson was the number one quarterback recruited out of high school. He was not recruited by
Michigan.
Terms
of being recruited by Michigan.
But you can't get a much highly touted quarterback than that.
And they've just never been able to develop anybody with any consistency at that position. Washington, Jimmy Lake's second year, defense should rebound. We shall see. They were kind of a little bit disappointing, but the Pac-12, all those teams had such an erratic schedule where they only played like four games.
All right, that's Big Ten football. We're going to talk more about that with Kenny White here in about 5 minutes. And a lot more to talk about today. Baseball with Ken Korak of the Oakland A's and Derek Stevens and Mike Palm from Circa back here in a minute. All right, welcome to My Guys in the Desert on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's a Thursday. We're live from the South Point Sportsbook in Las Vegas. And, Wes, there's a lot to talk about today, believe it or not. We have the NBA draft coming up. We're going to talk college football with Kenny White here in 5 minutes. A lot of baseball on the card tonight. And how about this story out of the NFL today? And is it going to change the way you look at some NFL futures bets? The league says COVID outbreaks could lead to forfeits. So basically, COVID-19 outbreaks among unvaccinated players could lead to forfeited games this season. That's a warning the NFL has sent out to teams. And so some of the teams with below the threshold, let's say below 50% of vaccinated players, I think it's motivation to say, hey, you got to get your players vaccinated before the season starts. Let's say the Colts have an outbreak of unvaccinated players the week before they play the Texans. They have to forfeit that game, according to what the league is saying today. So I think what the league's trying to jump ahead of this and get the teams to get the players vaccinated.
Yeah, it's really no surprise that they've elected to do this, because I do believe, and you mentioned the Colts, they were kind of one of those teams that were right around or just a little bit under that threshold. I know Michael Irvin, I know it's surprised to see Michael Irvin maybe being considered the voice of reason, but he came out and said, you know, hey, these guys should do that. You don't have the opportunities very often to win a Super Bowl. You lose the right players, you're done. You lose a game or two, you are done. You are out of the playoffs. So you've had some players come out, and I know he and I think Cole Beasley from the Buffalo Bills went back and forth. So, look, it's become a political issue, which is very unfortunate. But obviously, if you're the NFL, you have the right to go ahead and mandate that. Now, you have to work that through the Players Association, the Players Union in general. But I think there's going to be some cooperation here. And I would expect if anybody's going to get this right and get this handled, it'd be the NFL.
Well, it's a story to pay attention to today. I don't know if it's going to be a big story when the season starts, but Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, said that more than half of the league's teams have player vaccination rates above 80%, which is good news. But that still leaves a lot of teams out there that aren't at that number. Unvaccinated players will be subject to severe protocols during training camp and the regular season, including daily testing, mask wearing, and travel restrictions. So NFL really pushing hard to get these players vaccinated before the season starts. So there are none of us want interruptions or forfeits, right?
Right, because, I mean, look, they were able to pull it off last year, but the college football season, and plus you had different conference rules, like we mentioned with the Pac-12, when a lot of those teams only played like four games, it was an absolute disaster. So you really, I think, had an imbalanced competition when you got the SEC and the ACC playing mostly its full allotment of games, and then you got the Big Ten playing 7-8 games, the Pac-12 playing 4. You just want some uniformity here, because that makes it obviously better competition, and I think it makes it easier for us to handicap.
All right, let's talk more college football with Kenny White. Bring him in now. Always love to have Kenny White on the program, and I have your preseason magazine, Kenny, your power ratings preview, and it's a great book. Takes a long time to get through it. I'm not even close to halfway through it yet, but you put in a lot of work on this thing, I can tell. How many months did you work on it?
Year-round. Man, I start. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. Thanks for the compliments. It was a long 5 months, maybe four and a half, from the beginning to the middle of January to May 1st in that time frame. And then from there, it was, you know, getting it to the printer, getting it out to, you know, the distribution points and that. But and then keeping up with it. I'm making adjustments every single day that I find that players, TJ Finley from LSU transferring. I have him on LSU because that's how I finished May 1st. He transferred to Auburn May 25th, I think. So, you know, I'm updating pages for the website for the PDF. So all that information gets updated. But, yeah, over 9,000 player ratings. I've gone over every one and gone over every team rating, and I feel very good about this college football season.
All right, you can follow Kenny on Twitter at KWhiteyVegas. Also, thepowerratings.com and KennyWhiteSports.com. Let's talk about the Big Ten. And, Kenny, what team do you have power rated at the top? I'm going to guess Ohio State.
Hey, good guess. Yeah, they, obviously, with their recruiting ties, yeah, they have the most talent. But obviously, you know, a change at quarterback. And that's the great thing, I think, about college football this year. The big three, all of a change of quarterback. Everybody else is bringing back a ton of sixth-year and fifth-year seniors. So there's so much more experience in the game. This will be the year of the upset. There'll be so many upsets this year in 2021.
And, Kenny, we know Ohio State doesn't rebuild, they reload. But if you look at the market right now, I think I've seen like minus $2, basically kind of the market average in terms of Ohio State. They are usually a bigger favorite, you would think, to win this conference. But there is something that's telling me, even though they have loads of talent, this was a bad defense against the pass this year, and they absolutely have to reconfigure that. They're going to a 4-2-5, I think, maybe bringing in five defensive backs in that formation. But it seems like they should be the favorite, but it seems like they're gettable with teams because of all these super seniors. And you have a lot of these teams bringing personnel back. Like, you look at Penn State. They had very much a down year last year. I think they're one of the more interesting teams in the conference. Started 0-5, first time in program history. Rallied and went 4-5. But with all the opt-outs and the injuries and James Franklin being isolated from his daughter and his whole family, does it seem like Penn State's kind of the rebound team in the East to you?
Yeah, they very well could be. They're my second choice. I'm going to go to Ohio State, and one reason I'm under 11 wins on them this year because they have only seven starters on offense and only seven on defense. Most years you'd say, well, that's a great number. But again, I do starters differently. So 350 snaps on the football field is seven starts. Every 50 snaps, you get a start. So they only have seven guys on offense that have been on the field more than 350 snaps and seven on defense. C.J. Stroud steps in as a redshirt freshman quarterback. Great talent, but he hasn't done anything. He hasn't seen any action. This is the year to get Ohio State. It could be Penn State. I think James Franklin has done a very nice job with that program. Sean Clifford's back, fifth year. They got 14 players on their defense with 350 snaps or more. So Penn State is loaded with experience on defense, and their offense is as well. So, yeah, they're going to be a fun team to watch this year.
All right, if you look at the DraftKings odds to win the conference, Ohio State odds on favorite minus 180. At BetMGM, Ohio State's minus $2. Wisconsin, the second choice at 6-1. Iowa, 8-1. Penn State, 10. And then Michigan, 15. Indiana, 18. On down the list. Kenny, have you seen any win totals you think are worth betting in the Big Ten when you scour the numbers out there in the betting markets?
Yeah, you know, a couple overs, Michigan State. I think Mel Tucker has that program going in the right direction. Anthony Russo was I think, a great transfer quarterback. The Illini, that program was not bare. Lovie Smith actually did a very nice job recruiting. Brett Bielema really gets a talented group of players there. They're going to be able to play Bielema football, run the ball, play defense. I got them over 3.5 wins, then two unders. Iowa at 8.5. I just don't see it. I think the talent's down. I'm not a Spencer Petrus fan. I think that Iowa will go under that number. And then Northwestern under 6.5. And I hate to go under with those two guys because I do like both coaches, but I just don't think they have the same talent that matches up with everybody else in the conference.
Well, I'm with you on the Hawkeyes. I'd go under that number as well. I've been looking at that. I tried to play Iowa under in the past, and it hasn't worked so well. It's like Kirk Ferentz just recruits to his style, his system, and his teams tend to dominate on the offensive and defensive lines. What do you think of Iowa, West? Do you think under 8.5?
You know, I think they're the number two choice, really, in the Big Ten. Obviously, wow. Week one is in the West, at least. Okay. I think, look, Indiana, that's going to determine this. Can Indiana go on the road and get a win in the opener? Because Iowa, they started out really shaky last year, 6-2, or 0-2, and then went 6-2, went six in a row in terms of down the stretch for the season. So Iowa, you're kind of right. They do what they do. They always have a very good offensive line. They always have a very good defensive line. But the skill position players, I think, are pretty, you know, standard, I guess, in the Big Ten. Very average.
Right.
I
do sometimes like, the Hawkeyes don't look too sexy on paper, but they get it done somehow.
Yeah, I do like Kenny's win total, though, on Northwestern. No team returns fewer starters in the Big Ten Conference than Northwestern. I think Ohio State was the second least, and now they're going to try to do it with another quarterback again, another transfer, Ryan Helinski out of South Carolina. Of course, they had Peyton Ramsey from Indiana, who was, I think, effective, but not great. But it just seemed like everything went Northwestern's way this year, and I think that's going to regress for sure.
Kenny, is there a sleeper team? It sounds like you like the Minnesota Gophers from what I've read. I think you like the Gophers in the Big Ten. Any other sleeper type of teams in that conference you have your eye on right now?
Well, yeah, I do like the Gophers. The other sleeper team is Indiana. Wes mentioned them playing Iowa in week one. I think Indiana wins that game. I think they have a great chance of being right there with Ohio State and Penn State. Really, Tom Allen, what a job he's done with this program. They did lose their quarterback, Michael Penix, last year to the knee injury, but I've already seen and had reports he's 100% right now and looks better than ever. Some footage on him rolling out to his left. He's a lefty, throwing the ball on the run 70 yards in the air.
Right.
This guy, he's in such great shape. He's a really good quarterback, one of the better ones in the conference. I think they're loaded. 15 players on defense with 350 plays or more. Now, no ordinary, that'd be, you know what, they're still Indiana athletes. But Allen's upgraded the talent level there. So these are really good athletes that are very experienced now. They're ready to pull some upsets. Last year, 7-1 ATS. They're an overachieving group.
What about Minnesota? What do you like about the Gophers? You said around 20-1 to win the conference was attractive to you.
All of the returning experience, yeah, but P.J. Fleck, you got to love what this guy's done wherever he's been. He's done a great job. And Tanner Morgan being a fifth-year senior quarterback, I think is, again, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in this conference. Everybody from the backfield's back, the offensive line's back, the defense, 10 starters with experience. And they play Ohio State in week one at home. Talking about upsets, I think that could be an upset. I think Minnesota could take out the Buckeyes in week one.
And Minnesota getting two touchdowns at home. And I think Kenny's absolutely right on Minnesota. They're my sleeper team, too. I know we wrote the Big Ten portion of the college football betting guide, Matt, and I said for live dogs, I think it's Minnesota. Because if you look last year, they were coming off that 11-win season when they beat Auburn, I believe, in the Citrus Bowl. And the expectations, it was just kind of like too much too soon. And then Minnesota, they played that week one game against Michigan, and P.J. Fleck says rolled the boat, where Michigan sunk their battleship in week one. They absolutely kicked the you-know-what out of them in week number one, and then Minnesota wasn't the same ever since. But I think now the expectations are lower. Minnesota is going to sneak up on some people this year, have all their starters pretty much on both sides of the ball back this season.
Yeah, I was on the Gophers in that game. They got destroyed by Michigan, and Michigan turned out to be no good.
Right. So that even further downgrades Minnesota, I think. But I think too much this season.
All right, Kenny, how about, you know, I thought one interesting thing you said and one intriguing thing about college football this season, C.J. Stroud's a new quarterback at Ohio State. Clemson's obviously got a new starting quarterback. So does Alabama. So you got three power teams with new starting quarterbacks. How good is C.J. Stroud? Is he a legitimate Heisman candidate? How's Ryan Day's team going to look different this season?
Yeah, I was very shocked to see Stroud maybe the third or fourth favorite to win the Heisman. I guess it's, you know, Ohio State's offense and their talented wide receiver, because Olave and Garrett Wilson are both great receivers. I think that inexperience, though, the lack of experience for Stroud is going to hurt. The offensive line only returns one bona fide starter. Great players, size, speed, and experience. They're tremendous across the board. But that lack of experience, I think, could end up hurting them, and defense as well. It's still very talented football team. Obviously I am ranked 7th in the country. I guess they're third best, in the betting odds to win the national championship. But I think that's overinflated a little bit.
Kenny, I want to ask you about the favorite, I believe, consensus in the West here, and that's Wisconsin, who had a very down year, kind of like Penn State, a battle of the disappointing teams here this year in week number one on September 4th. Wisconsin went 4-3. Graham Mertz made his debut against Illinois, went 20-21 for 5 touchdowns, and it was like, okay, he's the second coming. He's the best quarterback we've had since Russell Wilson. Then he got COVID the next day, and it just never was the same with this team. But really what I saw out of Wisconsin last year, you rarely see them get kind of quote-unquote out-physical at the line of scrimmage, and I thought they really did throughout the season. I was surprised to see when Indiana went up to Camp Randall and just kind of beat them up at the line of scrimmage. Do you expect a rebound from the Badgers? We did not see that vintage running game that we usually see out of this program.
Yeah, I think you're going to see the rebound just because they do have big, strong offensive linemen looking across the line, you know, 312, 322, 323, 305, 319. I mean, every college team has all 300-pounders across their line, but this is a big physical team. I think they'll get back to that. I do like Graham Mertz as well. Great start to his career. They have a lot of experience on both sides of the football, and you can trust in this program that it's another program, just like you talked about Kurt Ferentz. I feel like the talent's down, but he recruits players to fit his program, and he does a great job of coaching them up with fundamentals. So does Wisconsin. They bring guys in that fit the program, and they coach them up. They really do a great job of that. So they're a fundamentally sound club, and it's just not a team you want to bet against.
I'd be surprised if C.J. Stroud at Ohio State in his first year wins the Heisman. But, Kenny, if I said you can only bet one guy on the Heisman board today, and that's it, who would you bet?
I'm going to take Spencer Rattler just because I think the yards, the touchdowns he's going to put up in that Oklahoma offense are going to be amazing. I think Sam Howell's right there with him, though. So a value play would be Sam Howell, but Spencer Rattler will put up all of the numbers this year.
How do you like that, Wes? I said he can bet one guy, and Kenny just bet two.
Well, you got to have a backup plan, and I would agree with those two selections.
I like those two as well. Kenny, tell people where they can get your college football preseason magazine.
Very easy to go. KennyWhiteSports.com. You can buy it there. It's in all the Barnes & Nobles across the entire country, over 600 locations. You can get a Barnes & Noble or BAM, Books a Million if you're in the Southeast.
All right, thanks, cool. Guys. Thanks, Kenny. Appreciate the time. Big Ten Breakdown with Kenny White, longtime Las Vegas odds maker. And we will come back. Wes and I will tell you who to bet on in Olympic basketball. And there's a new head coach in the NBA. Matt Humans and Wes Reynolds here, and we are live from the OddsTrader.com studio at South Point Casino. Go to OddsTrader.com, download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up to the second info you need. In-game tracking tools, live in-game odds and stats, real-time bet tracking, and a lot more at OddsTrader.com. Wes Reynolds, we're going to talk a little bit of golf in the next segment. We're watching the 3M Open at TPC Twin Cities. Pat Reed's off to a slow start, and that's disappointing.
That breaks your heart.
His 5 or 10 fans out there. Okay, let's talk Olympics. And when we talk Olympics, I don't want to talk much other than basketball. I know there's a lot of events to bet on here. I haven't had a chance to handicap many of them, but we've had a chance to dig into Olympic hoops. And my column this week in Point Spread Weekly, the VSiN Digital Magazine, is USA basketball hopes to avoid a fiasco in Tokyo. And obviously it was a fiasco early in the exhibitions here in Las Vegas. United States dropped its first two games. Team USA was a 28-point favorite to Nigeria, lost. 16-point favorite to Argentina, lost. Bounced back to win the next two. No reason to panic, really. This team was thrown together on the fly. Greg Popovich had only a few practices. And I think the Team USA players really just weren't into it yet. You have to adjust to FIBA competition, too.
Yeah.
Also, three players from the NBA Finals are going to join this team this week. It looks like Pop is going to have maybe 9 players available for the beginning of pool play this weekend against France. Then you have Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday from the Bucks, and Devin Booker from the Suns, who will join the team.
And you did bring up a point, Matt. Keep in mind, these are different rules. If you have not watched FIBA or international basketball, you have 10-minute quarters. Only 5 fouls are called on players instead of 6 in the NBA. There's no goaltending. There's no 3-second violations. The 3-point line in FIBA competition is 20 feet 6 inches versus the 23 feet 9 inches in the NBA. Also, it's a more physical style of play. So I think Team USA kind of had to get used to that, and they're still having to get used to that.
How about the goaltending?
Yes. Yeah, they're having to get, you know, you're not going to jump into a guy and get like a touch foul here in FIBA basketball.
Right, right.
So I think the physicality of the game really surprise these guys. And plus the fact that, you know, the world at least is getting closer to Team USA in international basketball. It's not like this is not 1992 where they're beating teams by 60 or 70 points. The I don't know about Angola, but I know they in trouble line from Sir Charles. These teams have really gotten, I think, more competitive. Now, Team USA may be an opportunity to buy low if you can get them at $3 or less. I think what I've seen right now is minus 350 at BetMGM. Greg Popovich has gone to that switch everything on defense, which is probably good for the allotment of players he has, and as they wait on the arrival of Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Devin Booker. So maybe a little bit of a slow start for Team USA. You've already seen France get bet a little bit, and I actually like the under in that game simply because I think France plays a little bit more of a defensive style. They do have Rudy Gobert down low, who is still one of the best post defenders in all of the NBA. Fournier, Frank Ntilikina from the New York Knicks, they're very dynamic defenders. Nick Batum can still guard. Timothy Luwalu-Cabarrot is still a very good defender. So what I'd be looking at that game, I think you're starting to see it get bet. I think the under is like 178.5 right now, and I would still bet that under. It's gone down about a point and a half already.
And remember, this is a 40-minute game.
Yes.
It's not a 48-minute game like the NBA. So the total is going to be lower. 178.5 is what you've seen play it under.
Yes.
What do you see for the line on the game?
Yeah, France has taken a little bit of the opening money. And by the way, the opener for USA against France is going to be on Sunday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock out here early morning on the West Coast. This was 14.5. Now you've seen it drop to 12, even some 11.5s out there. I've probably been late to the party. I had not bet France yet. That's certainly the way I would have won. But instead, I'm going to go with the under at 178.5 is the most I've seen.
Look at these odds from BetMGM on the Tokyo Olympics men's basketball. USA -350, Australia +750. Australia was up around 20 to 1 at one point.
Yeah,
you can find much better
odds. The word
is
out on Australia right now because I think that probably they are the team that is at least maybe the biggest roadblock to Team USA, even though they're still a substantial favorite. When you look at the roster, you have Patty Mills, Matisse Thybulle, Joe Ingles, Josh Green, Dante Exum, Matty Dellavedova, Aaron Baines. These are NBA rotational players. And Patty Mills, he's kind of like Ian Poulter in the Ryder Cup. In international competition, this guy is absolutely nails. So Australia, look, they gave Team USA trouble and spread them out. I think that I would prefer them over Spain. Spain is a very old team, still with the Gasols and Rudy Fernandez and Sergio Rodriguez. A lot of 30-plus-somethings.
Ricky Rubio, right?
And Ricky Rubio. A lot of 30-plus-somethings and even a couple 40-somethings on that roster. They're still a contender, but I think their time has passed to be, I think, the main competition for USA.
Slovenia, led by Luka Doncic, right around 20-1, right? We'll talk a little bit more Olympic basketball in the second hour today. Up next, there was a new head coaching hire in the NBA. Plus, we're going to talk golf. Stay tuned here to My Guys in the Desert. VSiN football betting guides are coming out soon. There's no better place, no better way to prepare for the college and pro football seasons. Our team of experts, led by Wes Reynolds, provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Each guide is only $20. Discounts available when you buy both. The pro football betting guide is going to be out in August. Now is the time to reserve your copy or sign up for VSiN All Access to get everything we offer for the entire football season. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. Over 100 pages in this college football betting guide. Plenty of picks, win total suggestions, power ratings, and Steve Mackinnon's wide array of numbers on every team in the VSiN college football betting guide. Wes Reynolds, let's talk golf. And Jeff Seeley might need to tweak his math model as it pertains to Fab Pat Reed. This week, he said again that Patrick Reed came out number one, the number one player on his math model this week. Right now, he's two over through six, nine strokes off the lead behind Ricky Fowler? What is this? Ricky Fowler tied for the lead at the 3M Open at TPC Twin Cities.
You know, Matt, and he's our old friend, Ricky Fowler. We want to see him play well. He has rebounded. It hasn't cashed us a lot of tickets, but we still like him anyway. But nevertheless, he has shown a little bit of signs of life. And look, always the best club in Ricky Fowler's bag pretty much his entire career is that putter. And today it was on fire. He gained 4.3 strokes putting on that 7-under round. Also gained a little bit on approach, a little bit off the tee. And he's starting to show a little bit of signs. And look, he is falling out of the top 100. He's trying to go ahead and, you know, get back into where he's in every major championship. Remember, he missed the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines because he did not qualify. Yeah. Played okay at the Open Championship. Was kind of back in the field, at least made the cut last week. But Ricky Fowler was a guy I did look at. I didn't end up betting him, of course. I always kind of tend to time Ricky Fowler wrong. When I'm on him, he doesn't win. And when I'm not, he gets absolutely on fire. So he is currently tied for the lead, that being Ricky Fowler with Troy Merritt, who I and Brady Cannon both had in the playoff at the Rocket Mortgage a couple weeks ago. Got beat on the fifth playoff hole by Cameron Davis. He was 100-1 shot. So there's a little bit of corollary, I think, with the Rocket Mortgage Classic and also this event, the 3M Open at TPC Twin Cities just outside of Minneapolis. And you see a little bit of crossover here on the leaderboard, and certainly Troy Merritt is proving that.
Well, it's a wide-open tournament.
Yeah.
You know, same with the Rocket Mortgage. You're going to see long shots up on the board on Sunday. And yeah. I think it's difficult sometimes to handicap these. You're just guessing at some of these players. But Ricky Fowler right now, 7-under with Troy Merritt. And we've seen Ricky Fowler get off to fast starts before and then fade over the weekend. So don't get too excited until he can do it for three or four days.
Yeah, he is currently right now at least the in-play favorite. I'm just using BetMGM here, plus 750 for Fowler.
Yeah, you can't bet that.
Yeah, and obviously this second afternoon flight is very early in its rounds. Troy Merritt currently 14-1. Louis Oosthuizen 18-1. And I didn't bet Oosthuizen. I just thought the number was too low. But I certainly think you got to be motivated here. He did not take his spot in the Olympic Games. So Louis Oosthuizen, kind of the next thing for him, is he wants to win on American soil. He has never won on American soil. With all of his wins around the world on the European tour and in various continents around the world, he has never won on American soil. So I know that motivates him. And poor guy, man. He was in contention in all three majors and comes home with no hardware.
Well, he's a likable guy, good sport. Finished third at the British. I had him at 36-1 odds. He was a 54-hole leader. And, somebody said to me, well, Louis choked. He didn't choke. The ball just didn't bounce his way.
Colin Morikawa played very damn well.
Colin Morikawa made everything.
Yes.
Everything on Sunday. And Louis was just, the ball was not bouncing his way. He took a bad hop into a bunker. He bogeys a hole. Mm-hmm. He burned the edge on how many different putts he missed by an inch or a half inch.
And it's a major championship, too. Even though that course played a little bit easier, you're going to make some mistakes, as the guy I was on, Jordan Spieth, did on Saturday.
Yeah.
Bogeying 17 and 18. But look, he fell off early in the Sunday round and then went 6-under through 8 holes and got right back in it. And it looks like it was going to be a 2-guy race between him and Morikawa. But Colin Morikawa, a very deserved champion golfer of the year.
Well, the strange thing about that is the previous week, Wes, I watched the Scottish Open.
And he was
nowhere.
And
Morikawa was terrible.
Yeah.
Okay? He tied for 71st, I think.
Yeah.
And going into the British Open, he ranked 124th in putting. And the Scottish Open was his first week playing links golf.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know how he could handicap that and say, hey, this is a guy I love in the British Open.
And that's what kept me off of him, because the stats, you know, when I send these stats in for long shots, and I send them to you as well, strokes gained approach every single week, Colin Morikawa. Greens and regulation gained every single week. And a big gap from the number one spot with Colin to the next spot at number two. But I kind of thought, you know, those stats are good, but the trends aren't good, because usually you need some tread on your tires to win at the Open Championship and win that Claret Jug. And, you know, he made the adjustment in 5 days. That, other than his superb putting last weekend on those very slow greens, that is what really stunned me, that this guy at 24 years old can just go ahead and, I'll just replace my 7, 8, and 9 irons this week, because he wasn't getting his short irons really through the ball on that thicker turf. And he makes that adjustment in 5 days, and you got guys that are top-end players in the top five right there with him in the rankings, like a Bryson DeChambeau, that's always messing with equipment and doesn't seem to get it right. It takes him a lot longer. Even John Rahm, number one in the world, new clubs this year in the bag. It took him about 3 or 4 months to kind of get used to him.
Okay. Yeah, it was surprising, to say the least, to see Morikawa play that. But he figured out the greens. He was knocking down every putt. It was crazy. Yeah. 15, 20-foot putts like they were tap-ins on Sunday. Louis Oosthuizen in 2021 has got 3 seconds and a tie for third. And he is in the clubhouse today at 3-under, 4 strokes back of the leaders, Ricky Fowler and Troy Merritt. Quick thoughts on Olympic golf. And it's going to be at the it's going to begin July 29th. John Rahm is the favorite, and Morikawa the second choice in Japan. And I played one long shot, Wes, a guy who I think can compete on any style of course. We saw him threaten to win the Masters a couple of years ago. He is obviously a good European player. It doesn't look like you have to be a bomber on this course in Japan to compete. I played Francesco Molinari at 100-1. Anything you looked at here?
Well, and I know a guy that's going to get support here because I think we know why he is in this. Sungjae Im, who I saw around high 30s to 40-1. Of course, Sungjae Im and also Siwoo Kim from South Korea. Remember, they took the Open Championship off to prepare for the Olympics, and there was a reason why.
Yeah.
Because if you are an Olympic medalist, any medal out of the nation of South Korea as a male, you avoid that 2-year military obligation. Because you remember the name Sangmun Bae, Matt,
sure,
who had won a couple events on the PGA Tour? He went and took that 2 years and served in the military, and he's never rebounded. So obviously, there is big-time motivation for these guys. Think it's probably going to end up being priced in the market, though.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look at Siwoo Kim. He was a 50-1 at the Westgate Superbook. Circa golf odds are up for the Olympics right now. By the way, news out of the NBA today, the New Orleans Pelicans have officially named Willie Green, the Phoenix Suns assistant, as their next head coach. He replaces Stan Van Gundy as the Pelicans coach. And Van Gundy went 31-41 last season for the Pelicans. Not shocking news. I think we anticipated that now that the Sun season is over. Back in a couple minutes with Ken Korak, Oakland A's radio broadcaster. From the OddsTrader.com studio at South Point Casino, go to OddsTrader.com, download the free OddsTrader app right now, start winning with up-to-the-second info you need. Visit OddsTrader.com. All right, let's bring in Ken Korak, Oakland A's radio broadcaster, voice of the Oakland A's. And Kenny, thanks for jumping on. I hesitate to say you're in Seattle preparing for tonight's game because we live in a different world and not all the broadcast teams travel to all of the road games. Are you in Seattle tonight?
I am not, Matt. I'm actually sitting in my living room in Pleasanton, California. I will be driving to the Coliseum here fairly shortly to get started with the broadcast tonight and do the manager show with Bob Melvin on Zoom like we've been doing for most of the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, Tim Nevert of the Dodgers has joined us several times, and Tim has not been traveling to road games either. And hopefully that changes for you guys because I'm sure you'd rather call the game from the park than – from your couch or from your home office. Ken Korak.
That's for sure. There's no doubt about that.
All right, Ken, also the author of Holy Toledo, Lessons from Bill King, which is a really good book, and in addition to If These Walls Could Talk about the Oakland A's. Follow him on Twitter at Ken Korak Radio. Ken, should I say you're the voice of the Oakland A's or the Las Vegas A's? What's going on up there?
Well, that's a great question. As Dave Cavalli said, the A's team president, there appears to be parallel paths moving forward as far as the A's future is concerned, although I'm still somewhat optimistic that a deal can be reached here between the A's and the city council. There's been some movement that I think has been positive in the last several days. I don't know what may or may not have been going on behind the scenes in the last, let's say, 2 or 3 days, but I guess I'm guardedly optimistic now that things are going to work out here.
Ken, with all the stories off the field, as you just mentioned with the A's, they've been a pretty good story on the field. Now in the number two in the wild card spot, 13 games over 500. Would expect at the bare minimum they're going to stay there. But we got the trade deadline coming up next week. July 30th is going to be the deadline. Do you expect the A's to be somewhat of buyers here? I know it's the A's aren't always looked at as buyers necessarily in the market, and they keep the payroll manageable. But they're right here in this spot, and they're 3.5 ahead of the Yankees and also the Seattle Mariners, who they'll take on tonight, trying to catch the Houston Astros. What do you think the A's are going to do, and do you think maybe Nelson Cruz is a possibility for Oakland next week?
Well, I'm sure they're looking at him. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I think any team that's in contention would look at Nelson Cruz because he's going to be a free agent after the year, of course, and he's having a great year. I think there is a little misconception regarding the A's when they get into contention that they don't go out and do things. Historically, and the A's have been really good. As you guys know, 11 times in the postseason beginning in 2000, almost every year the A's have had a chance, Billy Beane and David Forrest have gone out and done something. So I would expect them to go out and do that. Normally they're active. I don't know what they're going to do. And oft times Billy and David have surprised us with the moves they've made. So I would be almost shocked if the A's didn't do something, and who knows? I mean, there have been years in which they've done things that have been significant at the trading deadline.
Yeah, I can recall that, too. And the A's have been more aggressive than I think sometimes public perception is. Right now they're 55-42, three games back of the Astros in the American League West, and take a two-game win streak up to Seattle tonight. They just beat up on the Angels, as usual, in Oakland. What's the streak now, Kenny? Whether the A's won like 23 of 30 against the Angels in Oakland?
They've done really well against them over the years in Oakland. Now, they have not been so great against the Mariners. And as you said, beginning tonight, they have four against them. They have 13 games left against Seattle. So those games are going to be big. And the A's have done a decent job in their own division. Now they're 3-3 against Seattle. They've dominated the Angels, of course. They've struggled against Houston. And they don't have that many opportunities left against them. They only have six games left with the Astros this year at the very end of the season. So they're going to have to do some damage against the Astros in these upcoming head-to-head games.
Yeah, you're right. That opening series of the season against the Astros was Astros played a big part in that disaster for the A's, but they managed to bounce back from that.
Yeah.
Tonight, the A's.
It was a disastrous start, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. But like you said, they bounced back pretty quickly, actually. From that poor homestand. I think it was 1-7. Wasn't that right, Kenny? 1-7 to open
the
season?
They lost the first six, right? And then they wound up beating the Dodgers, and so that was their first win. It was the last game of the homestand.
1-6 homestand. A's in Seattle tonight. Sean Manaea goes against Chris Flexen in the A's, right around -145 favorites, total of 7.5 at most spots. DraftKings has 8. How do you break down the pitching matchup in tonight's game, Kenny, with Manaea against Flexen?
You know, it's a really interesting game. Now, they matched up on June 2nd, and the A's won the game. It was one of the rare bumps in the road that Flexen has had this year. You know, he's from Newark, California, which is only about 20 miles south of the Coliseum. So he's a local guy who was drafted by the Mets out of high school, as you guys know, and he really had a tough time parts of three seasons with the Mets and resurrected his career last year in South Korea. So he's been the Mariners' best pitcher, I think, at least recently. Manaea has been really good. His one loss record is extremely deceiving. If you look at his ERA and all the peripherals, they far outdistance what he's done with his one loss. And the A's have pitched great. One of the things that I think gives us all hope, and I think buoys the A's optimism going forward, is the A's starting pitching has been outstanding.
Yep.
1-5 in the rotation, they've been really good. Now, they haven't hit that much. And that's something that they're going to have to turn around to get back to a point where they might even have a chance to pass the Astros in the division. So they've got to hit better, but their starting pitching has been outstanding.
Ken Korak with us, radio voice of the Oakland A's. Follow him at Ken Korak Radio, also the author of a couple of books. And, Kenny, you just got a chance to watch the Angels and the A's. You've seen Shohei Ohtani up close, obviously, more than a few times this season. What are your impressions of Ohtani as a hitter and as a pitcher, and how surprised are you he's been able to do this? And do you think he's going to wear down at some point in the second half?
No, I mean, it's a great question. I'm not really surprised because we knew that he had the talent. His first two big league starts were against the A's. Now, that was a few years ago before the injuries and the Tommy John, but we had seen him dominate early in his time with the Angels over here in the States. So once they kind of took the reins off and said, you're going to pitch and hit, I bought into it really early. And if you watch him, and if you watch him, as I'm sure you guys did during the All-Star game and the festivities, he's having fun. It seems to me that he's really enjoying what he's doing. So he's a big, strong kid. I don't really see him wearing down this year. And he's pitching just once a week, too. It's not like he's pitching every fifth day or every fourth day. So he's phenomenal. The game that he pitched against the A's won the game late because he left after six. And the A's did damage against the Angels' bullpen. So he was dominant for six innings. It's as well as I think anybody's pitched against the A's this year.
Angels 46-48. Shohei Ohtani right now through 14 starts on the mound, 4-1, 11.7 strikeouts per nine with a 1.16 ERA. Wes, are you more impressed with that or what he's doing offensively? Because he's got 34 homers, 74 RBIs. He's batting .274.
I think he's kind of, I guess, what we expected in terms of – go ahead, Kenny. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say – no, go ahead, you guys. But I was going to say both.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we expected the production at the plate, but certainly to be able to go out every fifth day and I think be a pretty consistent pitcher. I know he had that disaster in the Bronx at the stadium where he didn't make it out of the first inning. But look, you're going to have that every once in a while. But Ken, let me ask you about tonight's opponent, the Seattle Mariners, now six games over .500. I think probably one of the more surprising teams in all of Major League Baseball. You've gotten a look at these guys up close, I think, several times this season for games. What are they doing that's making them at least maybe a contender, at least on the periphery for the wild card? Because it looks like this is a team that should be a year or two away because they do have a very good farm system.
Well, if you look at the raw numbers, it's confounding because based on the run differential, they should be five or six or eight games under .500 because they're way below. I mean, their run differential is well in the negative column, but they've won a ton of close games. If you go inside the numbers then and look at extra innings and one-run decisions, they're off the charts. So on the surface, I mean, they're last in the league in batting. They're only hitting .219. Their team ERA is well over four. But if you can win all the close games, you can throw that stuff out the window. So that would be the brief synopsis of what's going on with them. They have just found a way to win a lot of games late. And, Kendall Graveman, who was a good pitcher for the A's before injuries derailed his career, has done a really nice job for them in the bullpen at the back end.
Seattle Mariners, 51-45. They have a run differential of -52. You just don't see that very often.
Right.
Astros, 58-39. Astros, 19 over. Run differential of +135. Ken, how good are the Astros?
They're really good. And they're really good. And my perception of them might be skewed a bit by what we've seen head-to-head because they've dominated the A's, and especially if you look at the A's run differential for a long time, even when the A's were in first place, for a while they had a minus run differential. They're over that now. But the Astros has battered the A's in the first four games of the year, and you referenced that earlier, Matt. So they're really good. Maybe they could use another pitcher. They're still relying on a lot of kids in their rotation. But they're offensively, they remind me of like an old school American League team. Remember the Indians teams were 1-9 and they had the great DHs and that's what they remind me of right now. Kind of a throwback American League team. Even without George Springer, they can really rake all up and down their line.
And they absolutely smother left-handed pitching. So not a good idea to throw a lot of lefties in your rotation at these guys.
You know, that's true, and they're good, and they might be better if they can make a deal for Max Scherzer. We'll see what happens. But keep an eye on the Oakland A's, too. They're probably going to be in the playoffs. They're three games back of the Astros right now. Ken Korak, radio voice of the Oakland A's, at Ken Korak Radio on Twitter. Ken, always appreciate your time, man. Great catching up with you.
Oh, it's always great to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ken.
All right, we'll take a quick break here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. A lot to get to in hour number two, including Derek Stevens and Mike Palm from the Circa.